Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us here, and we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., and I'm glad to have you part of the audience. And remember, our shows are boxed up on our website, too, so you can get those at any time. Got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking with Pat Niehaus from the Federal Managers Association, and then round up the usual suspects. Stephen Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times are going to be talking to us, and the subjects include furloughs, sequestration, the thrift savings plan, the Roth option, and the Postal Service finances, as per usual, plus some of the changes in the President Obama's cabinet. First up is Pat Niehaus from the Federal Managers Association. Pat, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thank you very much. I see you're in town.
No, actually, I'm still in California.
Oh, are you? Okay, you got a 703 number. Well, good for you. Well, thank you for taking time. So you're just waking up out there, aren't you?
Well, actually, I usually start work at 6:30, so.
Okay, good. Well, we're not punishing you too much then. Hey, first off, just a brief one on what is the Federal Managers Association? What is it? Who's in it, and what do you do?
We are a professional association of managers throughout the federal government. We are the oldest management association in the federal government. We're celebrating our 100th anniversary this year, so we're very proud of that. We represent executive managers and supervisors in today's federal government, have done for 100 years.
I guess you sort of wear two hats then, because you're not only president of the Federal Managers Association, but you are yourself a federal manager. And I wanted to ask you, what kind of contingency plans are agencies making as far as the furlough and sequestration or possible shutdown?
Well, I think a lot of agencies are looking at their budgets to see what they can do to avoid furlough throughout this process. I know I've seen several agencies' plans include releasing all temporary employees and possibly term employees to minimize the impact on their permanent work staff.
Now, defense, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Navy and Air Force have both said they are going to have furloughs if it comes to that.
I think, I believe they are planning for that. I have seen, releases that everybody sees that's part of the plan. You have to plan in advance for that kind of thing.
Well, I've been getting some really passionate emails from people who are really worried about this, and several of them have sort of expressed unhappiness with the way the media has been covering it, and that is that it's, particularly out of Washington, it's being covered as if it were almost a sporting event, kind of like the Democrats playing the Republicans for softball. When in fact this is money. This is hard times for some people. A furlough, 1 day a week furlough, would be a 20% pay raise, and the time frame pay cut. I'm sorry, yeah, big difference.
Yeah.
20% pay cut, and this would be from April, presumably through the 1st of October.
Yeah, that's the projection I've seen too, and. I know we have employees on my installation that aren't going to be able to make their mortgage payments if they have a 20% cut in pay.
And I know it would vary from state to state, but the idea of being furloughed 1 day a week as opposed to a week at a time or 2 weeks at a time is going to make it difficult, if not impossible, for people to apply for unemployment.
It does vary so much across the country from state to state. As a matter of fact, I have an inquiry into the state of California now to see how that would impact us in California. I don't know.
Okay, we want to keep posted on that, because that's a possibility. The problem, this raises so many problems. If, say, you're furloughed 1 day a week, and you apply for unemployment for 4 days, and then when they come back, Congress, in the unlikely event that Congress votes money to make those salaries whole, you're in trouble with the unemployment people.
You'd have to refund the money probably that you got.
Yeah,
you got it in good faith, so there wouldn't be any penalty, I'm sure.
Yeah. I see so many things. There are places when those of us in Washington think about the world, we think about life inside the Beltway, but most of it, in fact, goes on elsewhere, including where you are in California. But I think of towns like, Washington has been almost recession-proof. You know, compared to the rest of the country, we have had a very good time here. Unemployment
Absolutely.
Is low. You know, with the federal money coming in, the defense money coming in, and the federal contractors, and the people, you know, like myself and this station, who live because of federal workers, what could happen if there's a shutdown or even a furlough situation. And I'm thinking of places like Huntsville, Alabama, and Ogden, Utah, where there's a very large federal presence in a very small town, and what this could do to the revenue, to restaurants, to tourism, to just about everything that depends on federal money, and that is federal money coming from federal workers. Have you guys looked at this, the possible economic impact on areas?
No, we haven't done any studies on that. We've been concentrating on the impact on our members.
What would that be?
Our members are fortunately managers, so they may be they're further along in their career and a little higher grade than a lot of people. But I know one of the members of my local chapter here asked me the other day if it came down to, you know, two furlough days, a pay period, since he makes twice as much as his secretary, could he take an extra day and let his secretary not have to take furlough days, because that way she could make her mortgage payment and she's a single mom. So, you know, our managers are not only looking out for ourselves, but we also have employees that we're concerned about. We don't want our employees not having a place to live because they can't make their mortgage payment for several months.
Yeah, well, I imagine the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund is watching this very closely. They do make loans and grants to people, but budgeting for a 20% pay cut for 3 or 4 month period is mind-boggling for a lot of people.
It really is. We got
an email from a Department of Labor investigator, and she's in Cleveland, and she says, please ask your guest if in the event of a furlough, would managers also be furloughed? The military has announced that it will furlough employees one day per week. Does that include management? And I emailed her back, and I said, I assume it does, but hearing it
does.
It does, okay. So,
yes. When DOD especially looks at civilian employees, they don't look at civilian managers and civilian employees. They look at civilians.
Okay, now, going to be a lot of places where they are going to, you know, you remember in the old days they used to talk about essential and non-essential people, and then political correctness overrode that, so they had to go to emergency and non-emergency. But presumably, an awful lot of people in defense and in many agencies will be considered emergency or are considered emergency people. Will they be allowed to work, required to work during the furlough?
But we haven't seen any specific guidance on that yet. But speaking from experience with the last time we were furloughed in the late 90s, I was one of those. At that time, they were calling us essential folks, and I was required to work all 3 days of the furlough. And it would have been without pay had they not given us back pay.
Right.
So those of us who are in those types of positions would be probably required to work during the furlough.
And, you know, that was 1995, 1996. You and I were just children. I barely remember it.
Absolutely, yes.
I barely remember it, but I do remember that Democrats won the public relations war, if you will. Most of the media and most of the public seemed to side with the president and the Democrats as opposed to Newt Gingrich and the Republicans and blame them for the shutdown. But one of the things Congress did was, as you pointed out, it did vote for money to pay people for the time that they had been on furlough. So it turned out to be a very costly, wasteful, silly paid vacation that people didn't want and weren't expecting, but they got. This time around, I'm talking to people, some of the same people who've been through this before, and they were not worried about us going over the fiscal cliff, but they are very worried about this upcoming situation. And a number of them are speculating that if there is a furlough, that Congress will treat it like a furlough, and that is nobody will get paid. Need to take a break here, but I want to get your thoughts on that. Be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. please join me this week for my special guest, Al Bihar, Vice President and Senior Private Client Fiduciary Advisor at Wilmington Trust. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients across the country. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
On Saturday, February 9th, 2013, the Northern Virginia chapter of the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association will host the 33rd edition of the annual FCA Nova Valentine's Ball. This fun social event will mix and mingle 700 industry, military, federal government, telecommunications, and IT professionals at the elegant and newly remodeled Tyson's Sheraton Premier. Enjoy dining, dancing, all while bumping elbows with some of the brightest minds in the industry. For more information, visit fcanova.org.
The Bible says the borrower is slave to the lender. In other words, when you owe people money, they own you. So are you tired of being a slave to your mortgage and all your other debts? Just think, a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest, and the banks get it all. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. I've shown over 2 million people how to eliminate their debts, including their mortgage, credit card debts, car payments, and student loans. And now I want to show you. So let me rush you a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible. Just call 1-800-400-8380. You'll discover powerful debt-eliminating secrets that will help you break free from being a slave to your debts. The truth is, you can get out of debt, no matter how much money you owe or how much money you make. For a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible, call now while a limited number of copies are still available. Call 1-800-400-8380. For your Debt-Free Bible, call 1-800-400-8380.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts Band at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball, presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd at the Washington Convention Center. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser features a world-class silent auction with travel packages from American Airlines and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser, the Leukemia Ball, supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs. There are more than 19,000 people in the D.C. metro region living with leukemia, lymphoma, or myeloma. Someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer every 4 minutes. Help the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society cure blood cancer by attending this can't-miss event. To purchase a ticket, please call 703-399-2900. That's 703-399-2900. Or visit leukemiaball.org.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one.
Okafor. Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stop. Joanne.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Hey, welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. I'm talking with Patricia Niehaus. She is president of the Federal Managers Association, which I believe she said is celebrating its 100th birthday this year. Been around a long time, and as the name implies, it does represent federal managers. Patricia is herself a working federal manager in California with the Defense Department, right?
Right. I work for Department of the Air Force.
Okay. Now
and I'm not speaking for Air Force today.
Exactly. Yes. Well, understood. Understood. You're on leave, right, as it were, right now.
Yes.
In the 1995 shutdown, federal workers were off 3 days here, 3 days there. Nobody, as I understand it, actually missed a paycheck. By the time the furlough was over, the involuntary furlough was over, the Congress had voted funds to pay people. So I don't think anybody missed any money, and I don't think anybody even got two checks. my recollection may be wrong, and it may have varied with the pay periods. But that was then. That was 95, 96, and the people were on a furlough, but they did get paid for that time. Last year, the FAA was forced to furlough about 1,000 people. I think they were in the medical branch or medical services. And ironically, some of them had to work or chose to work even though they were on furlough. When they came back, when it was over, it was a dispute over transportation funds. It had nothing to do with their jobs. When they came back, the Congress said, no, we're not going to pay them. A furlough is a furlough, and that was that. And at that point, the Department of Transportation lawyers came up with some money in a fund somewhere, so they made those people whole. So they did it automatically in 95, 96, did it kind of with an end run last year. What do you think are the odds that if there is a furlough that people will get paid this time?
With the current economic climate and the lack of action in Congress, I don't see it happening.
That's what I'm hearing.
Just my personal opinion.
Sure.
I don't think we'll get back pay on this one.
Sure. Well, you know, none of us are psychic, but the thing that intrigues me about it is I've been covering this a long time. I've been with everybody else to the brink any number of times. If you look at the past year or two, look at the things federal workers were worried about losing the high three. They were worried about paying more for their retirement benefits. There were a number of these things. We're worried about vouchers and worried about, what was it, the chained COLA, or reducing the cost of living adjustment for people. Those things have all gone by the wayside. They may come back, but they've gone by the wayside. But people who have before said nothing's going to happen, and people who said nothing was going to happen with the fiscal cliff, that Congress would, as it did, pull some rabbit out of a hat at the last minute, they're now saying this furloughing is likely to happen. And they're also saying, as you say, that given the climate, this is going to be a real furlough, and that is no work, no pay.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's going to be the case. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but...
Yeah,
well,
you're not known for being an alarmist. I mean, Washington is a center of pressure groups and groups that represent people, and it's often to their advantage to present things in a very bad light, A, to whip the members up, and B, to look good when it doesn't happen. But I'm hearing from people behind the scenes, and including fellow reporters on the beat, and they're saying this time, this is not a drill, it may be different this time. Maybe a silly question here, a childish question. Is there anything individual federal workers can do about this, the potential for furloughs and the attitude in Congress of toward government workers?
I would think they need to. Every federal worker should be contacting their local representative and senator and letting them know that they are their constituents and this is how it impacts their constituents.
I mean, can you see this the trickle down, if you will, or the ripple effect of this, if feds take a 20% pay cut for several months, what this could do to some communities? What about your community?
Well, Travis is one of the largest employers in Solano County.
Right.
And so it will have a significant impact because I think people will not be spending the kind of money we would spend otherwise. You know, when you have a 20% pay cut, that eliminates a lot of your discretionary spending.
Well, I think
so a lot of people will pull back and only spend what's absolutely necessary, which will hurt the merchants.
Yeah, I think it does things to your head. And you were talking about your fellow federal manager, supervisor, who was wondering if he could give up a day's pay so that his somebody in his office, a lower grade, could get that money. And the answer is no, right?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been able to explore that. I was just asked that yesterday, and so it would be. You know, actually, to the government's benefit to let him do that because he makes more in one day than she does in two. So,
you know,
they'd save a little extra money.
My feeling, and of course, the people at OPM and OMB, and then now the different agencies have to look at this and see how it works. But my sense is that politically, nobody has that this really is a game of chicken between the Republicans and the Democrats, between the GOP-led House and the Democratic-controlled White House, and that people are looking at this almost as a sporting event, if you will, and as a battle of wits, but they're not looking at the impact on people. I mean, think about the paperwork if they were to allow this. So they'll not pay this fellow a GS-15, but they will use the money they would have used to pay him to pay a subordinate. I mean, that could be a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that could be done, but I think that might be something that you know people need to look at along the way to see would it be possible to do that, because there are a lot of managers who are very concerned about their employees and they know which ones of their employees would be able to absorb a 20% decrease in pay for that length of time and who wouldn't be.
Yeah, I just don't see the logistics of how it could be worked out. I mean, that would require a new federal agency to set it up. I know I was in a private sector situation where we were given the choice of everybody taking a 5% pay cut or of laying people off. And in that case, we voted to take a 5% pay cut. But that was a relatively small group of people, and it was done via the union, and it all happened very quickly, and it was sort of a one-solution-fits-all deal. But again, I think this idea, while it's noble that somebody would give up pay, especially if they make more money, I just don't see how it could possibly work. I think the legal department would come back and say, if you want to help her, loan her the money.
Yeah, and that may very well be what would have to happen.
Yeah. Okay. What are you telling your members in your bulletins? I saw your Washington report. What are you telling them about the possibility of this furlough and of the impact of sequestration coming down? And what's the outlook for the rest of the year?
Well, we're very concerned about the outlook for the rest of the year. Managing by continuing resolution is always a challenge. We can't always project what we need throughout the year or know whether we're going to be able to meet our mission requirements if we don't know what budget we're going to have.
So I read somewhere the other day that it seemed to me an exaggeration, but they said federal offices were paralyzed, and that is nobody was doing anything. That's not the case, is it?
No. We're all continuing to work. We are postponing a lot of things, a lot of non-mission critical things, you know, like maybe building maintenance that doesn't impact safety. Is being postponed. I know a lot of agencies are postponing their we regularly upgrade our computer equipment. That kind of thing is being postponed. So anything that can save the money. I know I saw something the other day. I think the Navy is canceling the appearances of the Blue Angels at various places. And I heard they're even canceling Fleet Week at many places. So, you know, those kinds of things that don't impact the mission are being canceled. But I think the mission essential things will still find a way to make our mission work.
I remember some years back being invited to a military base because they were reducing the workforce. It was the so-called Cold War dividend. And they were going to be shutting down people, and they helicoptered us up to see these people and talk to them and see how they were being handled by defense. Between the time we were invited and the time we went, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, and by the time we got there, they were rebuilding, even though they knew they were going to downsize eventually. And the problem they had to post guards because people were working double shifts for free. And then they would go home, and they would try to climb back over the fence and come in and work some more. So that's why I sort of took it with a grain of salt when they said that people are sitting around now in a catatonic stance. So you say life is going on in government, huh?
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the reasons that DOD in particular looked at one day a week furlough as opposed to, you know, just doing it in one chunk. Is because then managers have the ability to schedule their employees furlough days for different days of the week. We don't have to shut down our operation.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not feasible in many government operations to shut down for a full week or certainly a month, wouldn't think.
Right.
All right. Pat, listen, thank you for being with us, taking time and getting up so early there in California. Pat Niehaus, the president of the Federal Managers Association. We'll be right back, and we'll be talking with Steve Losey, Sean Riley from the Federal Times. Be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Ovechkin down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe! Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Ovechkin, he scores! There it is, number one of the season!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
Work in technology? The new career site PowerJobs.com is currently featuring senior-level technology positions from top companies like Accenture and Pioneering Evolution. Powered by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com is designed to connect Washington's top talent to top jobs in the region's influential industries. Visit PowerJobs.com today to start your job search. PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
Hey, everybody, this is Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, February 3rd, we are getting healthy in studio. We'll be sipping juices from Puree and talking about how to do the paleo diet. And if you've heard of CrossFit, we're going to get all those exercises right here in studio.
So you better listen. You'll get healthy before your Super Bowl party. That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
Do you hear that? That's a cuttlefish. Ars Raytheon sees it the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
So just how many ships can one ship be? Many, thanks to LPD Flight 2. Designed by the shipbuilders at Huntington Ingalls Industries, this next generation in the proven LPD class will provide America with a common hull ship for multiple missions. A ship that's built for flexibility, survivability, and affordability. Now that's innovation. Find out more at HuntingtonIngalls.com today. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right.
Instead of daily nicotine patches or pills, an experimental anti-smoking treatment aims to prevent the pleasures of smoking through vaccination. The vaccine is made of tiny biodegradable particles engineered to instigate an immune response against nicotine. Lloyd Johnston of Selecta Biosciences says it could work for years.
DARD vaccine goes away, but we've taught the body how to make antibodies.
Those antibodies latch onto nicotine molecules, making them too big to cross the blood-brain barrier.
They essentially make your blood like a big sponge for nicotine so it never gets to the brain. And therefore, you don't get the reward effects of smoking, which makes it easier to stop smoking. But more importantly, it helps prevent relapse.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. It's Mike Causey. I'm just talking with Pat Niehaus, president of the Federal Managers Association. And now we're going to go to what I call the round up the usual suspects part of the show, the one and I really enjoy talking with the guys from Federal Times. And today we have Sean Riley and Steve Losey. Gentlemen, you with us?
Yes, we are.
Hey, great. Glad to have you. And listen, take things kind of out of order here, but last week I promised a listener, somebody emailed us and called in and asked that we talk about labor management forums, and I forgot to ask you about them. But could we deal with that and explain what a labor management forum is?
Sure. This is a the so-called partnership forums are something that the Obama administration revived. It was something that was going under the Clinton administration. When George W. Bush came in, one of the first things he did in office was to scratch these programs. These are basically regular meetings where managers sit down with labor leaders and hash things out and say, this is what we're working on. You know, do you have any ideas on how to make this better? Do you have any problems that you want to bring to us? Which kind of seems like a bit of a kind of a no-brainer thing, but apparently in the government it needs an official executive order to do. So the Obama administration has been working on this since the end of 2009, and to be honest, the progress so far is somewhat lacking. And one of the problems is these partnership forums, especially at the local level, aren't engaging in what the unions call pre-decisional involvement. This is essentially when they start thinking about a change that needs to be enacted, that they loop the unions in before a decision is made. And what the unions say is happening right now is the managers come to them after after all is said and done, and they say, "Here's what we've decided. Now let's talk about it." And you know, the unions have a point. You know, at that point, you know, what's the point of sitting down and talking with labor? So John Barry, the director of the Office of Personnel Management, has been trying to move the ball on this front, but the message is getting lost as it goes further down the line from the top leaders to the frontline leaders. So what he and the National Council decided a couple of weeks ago was to create a panel to kind of resolve these problems as they come up. And so it's going to be enacted over the next couple of months, and we're just going to have to wait and see how this problem resolution panel, how it works.
Well, I remember during the Clinton years, it seemed to work very well, especially from the union standpoint. And a lot of people in management complained that the meetings were frivolous, that they had to meet over virtually everything. It wasn't like a negotiation, but it was just a chance to get together, and that everybody brought their assistance and whatnot. And this was one of the reasons the Bush administration, right or wrong, ended them and moved for that pay for performance at the same time. Now we've gone back to try and go back to the Clinton years, and the federal and postal unions were very happily and strongly supported Mr. Obama, both in his first term and for reelection, and they're now in private particularly expressing a lot of disappointment that this thing seems to be dragging on, whereas they think it should have been in place by now.
That's right. You know, and there's some thinking out there that maybe part of the problem is that the presidential election last year, Obama was going up against Mitt Romney. It wasn't looking, you know, for a while it wasn't looking certain that Obama would be reelected. And perhaps, you know, some managers out in the field thought, well, Obama's going to lose this thing. Romney's going to come in and he's going to scratch it just like George W. Bush scratched it. But of course, that's all resolved now. And one thing John Barry said, you know, he raised that possibility that people might have been waiting to see what happened with the presidential election. And he's saying now this is done. He said, you know, his quote was, "We're going to take this hill and we're not going to give up on this." So, the message from the Office of Personnel Management is partnerships are here to stay, and get on board with pre-decisional involvement.
It's too bad that more common sense and, as you said, less executive orders couldn't be introduced into the government and just do it, because the government workers have to do what Congress tells them and or the White House, and they do a 180 about every 8 years on whatever program is going on.
That's right. And you can't really – in that light, you can't really blame the managers for saying, you know, well, management idea du jour. You just, you know, wait. It's like they say, you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes and it'll change. You don't like this management directive, wait 15 minutes, it's going to change. So that's kind of what they might have thought was going on, but it's going to stay for at least another 4 years.
It's some interesting going ons with the Thrift Savings Plan, the world's biggest 401k plan and the biggest employer-sponsored plan. One with the Roth option, which you guys say is booming, and the possibility of automatic enrollment of uniformed service people. So right now, I gather, if you're in the military, you have to enroll yourself in the Thrift Savings Plan. You don't automatically get coverage as the civilians do. Is that right?
That's right. You know, a couple of years ago, the TSP successfully got Congress to pass a law creating automatic enrollment for civilian employees. Basically, when you get a job in the federal government, if you don't choose to sign up for a TSP plan, after a month, the TSP signs you up for you. And the Pentagon, as they were discussing this, the Pentagon was kind of lukewarm on the whole idea. And part of their issue was there is no Roth option. And David Chu of the Pentagon, who used to be at the Pentagon, said, we would need a Roth option before we even think about automatic enrollment. Now, a Roth option is basically a change in how taxes are paid when you're saving in the Thrift Savings Plan. The way it works now is TSP employees, TSP enrollees, put pre-tax dollars in their plan, meaning they don't pay taxes now, but when they retire, then they pay taxes. The thinking is, when you're in retirement, you're going to pay a lower tax rate than you do while you're working. Now, for military service members and select groups of federal employees like judges, the opposite is true. Service members are likely to pay lower tax rates now while they're on active duty than they will when they're retired. So it would make sense for military service members to pay their taxes now and not later. So that's why a Roth option would be better for military service members. So the Roth option gets enacted last year. It's been gradually rolled out to various branches of the military. The Marines got it first. Last fall, the Army, Navy, Air Force got it as well. And it's just been exploding since then. Back in November, there were a little bit more than 6,300 military service members with Roth accounts. That almost quadrupled in December. There's now just shy of 25,000 military service members. That's almost a quarter of the 100,000 plus TSP enrollees total who have a Roth option.
Well, that's incredible for a variety of reasons, and military people in particular, I would think, would be candidates for the Roth option. Not only the pay the taxes later, or pay the taxes now rather than later idea, but just the fact that they tend to be young. You know, you're coming in at 18, 19, 20, and whether you make a career of the military or the federal government or you go into the private sector, having a Roth nest egg at age 25 and 30, that the potential for growth is tremendous. And then when you take it out, if it's worth $1 million, it's tax-free, correct?
Exactly. And that's one of the things that is really always on the TSP managers' minds, that young people just – it's kind of a truism. Young people aren't thinking about retirement, and they don't do as much planning for their future as they probably should. So they see automatic enrollment as a way to sort of nudge these young service members and young federal employees as well into actively planning for their retirement.
Well, and by not automatically enrolling in the military, too, they're really getting off on the cheap here. They are denying these people that automatic 1% contribution, which is the equivalent of a 1% tax-deferred pay raise, aren't they?
Well, I know that the military doesn't get the matching funds
federal
employees do. And I'm not sure, but I don't believe they get the 1% either. But I'll have to check.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. And that's another injustice, that they don't get what people under the FERS system do. And these people are out there, many of them in harm's way.
That's true. So the discussion at the TSP meeting Monday was that this explosion of interest in the Roth option could pave the way for automatic enrollment. The next meeting where the TSP folks are going to meet with the Pentagon is going to be in April. They're going to discuss it there. It would, if the Pentagon does say, yes, we're interested in this, let's move forward, it would require Congress to act. And, you know, my gut feeling is if TSP goes to Congress and says the Pentagon is on board, we want this, Congress would probably act because it would mean money now as opposed to money later, because people would be paying taxes today instead of when they retire, and Congress can use that to say, oh, look, we're raising revenue. And, of course, they love anything that will scratch just a little bit more revenue to try to alleviate this deficit situation even just a little bit.
Sounds good. Hey, I want to talk to you about turnover at the top when we come back here. We need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE.
What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's fedfaqs.org.
Agencies hope to consolidate 1,200 data centers by the end of 2015. Consolidating data centers is more than moving hardware. It's an opportunity to modernize, reduce space requirements, improve performance, and cut energy consumption. Join us on Thursday, January 31st, as we discuss the technical, financial, and operational challenges of data center consolidation with executives from NOAA and USDA. Tune in on January 31st at noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Thundercat Technology and NetApp.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The U.S. and Niger have signed a status of forces agreement, spelling out legal protections and obligations of U.S. forces that might operate in Niger in the near future. Why? Pentagon spokesman George Little acknowledged the agreement but declined to discuss U.S. plans for a military presence in Niger. He said in his own words, "They expressed a willingness to engage more closely with us, and we are happy to engage with them." I'm J.J. Green.
Airmen, we're on our way.
At EADS North America, we help our country respond to emergencies and natural disasters.
We see you. We're coming in.
From coordinating communications to medevac and emergency response, we provide the mission-critical systems our country demands. Every day, we support homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe.
Patient secure. ETA 10 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Working together, keeping the nation safe, is the focus of ASSIA's 12th annual Homeland Security event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt, Washington. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will dialogue on cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Register to attend or exhibit at AFSEA.org, keyword homeland. That's AFSEA.org, keyword homeland.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times. And, you know, after each election, half of us cheer and half of us weep, but we mostly go about our business. But in a town like Washington, particularly a town like Washington, you have so many people whose jobs, whose careers, whose money and employment is tied to who's in office and who's the big boss. There are approximately 8,000 jobs that are available to any administration when they come in, and they go into various federal agencies, defense, interior, labor, and these are the political appointees that carry out the will of the White House or the administration. There's always a lot of turnover in those jobs. I think the average life expectancy is 18 to 20 months for the typical political appointee, but when an administration changes, as it is now, the second term is really a different administration from the first. A lot of people are leaving. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is leaving. The Interior Secretary is leaving. Leon Panetta at Defense and others. Ray LaHood just announced his the other day. What are you hearing about the what's happening at the cabinet level and a career what are happening to the non-career people? And also, what's the situation on Capitol Hill? Because number of new members, number of new people appointed to take care of committees, and that's going to mean a big turnover in the staffs.
That's right. Yeah, one of the biggest changes is, as you mentioned, Hillary Clinton is leaving. Her last day is Friday. And last night, the Senate confirmed John Kerry, one of their own, to be the next Secretary of State. It was an overwhelming approval for John Kerry, which is kind of a load off the administration's mind, because the first person floated to be the next Secretary of State, Susan Rice, got caught up in that whole Benghazi controversy, and so John Kerry sailing through with a 93 vote victory is just, you know, a relief for them. And as you mentioned, yeah, the we've got DOD getting the head of DOD becoming open, possibly replaced by former Senator Chuck Hagel. Tim Geithner is leaving. He's likely to be replaced by Jack Lew. And the pretty much the only people who aren't leaving are Janet Napolitano, the Homeland Security Secretary, Eric Holder at Justice, and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. Mm. So yeah, and there is always a large amount of turnover. So it'll be interesting to see how things settle down from here.
And you have hundreds of jobs that are dependent on who is the secretary or who heads the department. And I guess all of those people, there's kind of a target on their back once Hillary Clinton leaves and once Leon Panetta gets on the plane for California for the last time.
Well, if they haven't already started, I imagine a lot of those folks will be polishing up their resumes and looking for other opportunities or to spend more time with their families. And I would note, in addition to what Steve said, I mean, there are a number of positions that are where we had had people leave or are expected to leave. that are very important but don't get quite as much attention. This week, Michael Astru announced that he's leaving. He's stepping down next month as commissioner of the Social Security Administration, which is, you know, probably one of the best-known federal agencies and certainly affects more people probably than any other.
Yeah.
No replacement's named for him at this point. You know, he served, the person serves a six-year term. And there's also speculation that after about a year, the Office of Management and Budget, which is probably the most important agency that most people have never heard of, that the administration could be looking at a former Clinton administration official, Sylvia Matthews Burwell, to take the position permanently. As you recall, Jack Lew left about a year ago to become the White House Chief of Staff, and as Steve noted, is now probably on his way to become Treasury Secretary. But in the meantime, at OMB, you've had Jeff Zients, who's the Deputy Director for Management, filling in as Acting Director, and actually now he's back. That appointment officially expired a couple months ago as Acting Director. He's still running the agency, but as Deputy Director for Management. You know, but given how important budget issues are going to be, certainly in the next few months, if not the next 4 years, I think it's probably pretty important for the administration to get somebody in there, you know, with a permanent designation next to their name.
Yeah, there's a lot of movement upon Capitol Hill, too, as people try to find new jobs as their committee chairman are replacing them with their own people.
Yeah, and actually, you know, the Republicans, I believe, in both houses have term limits for their chairman or, you know, top members. And so that exacerbates the amount of turnover.
Very good. I'll ask you both on this. I know you're talking about some planned Navy shipyard cuts. And what else is going on in the sequestration-related world?
Lots of stuff. I mean, the Defense Department in the last 2 weeks, after months of relative silence, has put out a host, you know, a large amount of guidance, both from DOD and the services, about various steps they're taking. You know, the Navy has four public shipyards. Those are in Maine, Virginia, Washington State, and Hawaii. According to a memo from the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Greenert, a week or two ago, they'll be cutting about almost 10% of their workforce through attrition and laying off temporary workers. They're looking at big cutbacks, I think, in all the services in terms of conference, travel spending, non-essential maintenance, and certainly they're not ruling out the possibility of furloughs.
Well, and that's interesting, too, the local impact. Norfolk is the U.S. Navy, and Hawaii, the Navy base, is very important in all of those places.
Yeah, and on the furlough front, one thing that's looking more and more certain is that furloughs are going to be a reality if sequestration goes into effect. And given some of the talk from Republicans like Paul Ryan over the weekend, it looks like sequestration is most likely going to take effect. But the Pentagon's, the stuff that's dribbled out of the Pentagon seems to indicate that in April, perhaps April 16th, DOD services could start furloughing employees. We could be looking at 1 day a week furloughs for the rest of the fiscal year. So if that's something that DOD employees are going to have to start preparing for their paychecks to be docked.
20%.
Yeah, 20%.
I want to run something by you. I know when we talked about this in private earlier, you know, these various horror things that were proposed for federal workers that didn't come to pass. We dutifully reported them and explained what they were, but we kept saying, don't lose a whole lot of sleep about it. You know, the high three to high five, for instance, we kept pointing out that idea has been around forever and it hasn't happened and it didn't happen. When we were coming toward the fiscal cliff, I know we all in private and sometimes in public said really didn't think it was going to happen, that, you know, they would at the last minute swoop down and save the day, which they did, or at least they kicked the can down the road. But this time around, an awful lot of people, and I'm getting the feeling that this sequestration, this is not a joke.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I think even if they come up with some deal that avoids sequestration, it's still going to contain massive budget cuts. So it's kind of a pick your poison sort of thing. Do you want the budget cuts to come as part of sequestration, or do you want them to come as another deal? It's just not realistic to think that they're going to avert sequestration and then turn on the spigots that just let the money flow. I mean, we are in this is an age of austerity. I mean, the GDP, they just announced the GDP shrank by a tenth of a percent, and that was pretty much entirely due to reduced government spending. So, I mean, as much as it pains me to say it, the government is contracting right now, and federal employees are just going to have to batten down the hatches and prepare and just try to get along as best they can.
So save your money, huh?
Exactly.
All right, very good. Listen, thank you so much for being with us. Always good to have you guys, and we'll be back here next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Remember, our shows are archived here on our homepage, so you can listen anytime. Tell a friend, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.